Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death, will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. We start to see Hunt's frustration with Bryce not taking care of her leg. Think about how the last chapter ended. Hunt was made to heal by Victoria. So he's kind of already frustrated. You know, like, yes, he was able to, like, fly in close proximity and they kind of have this, like, sweet moment. But he's still, he got, like, alpha'd.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. Whatever was in her stare made him go back on what he would normally do. And I think that he's, like, kind of mentally taking it out on Bryce. Now, I also think that it has to do with guilt. And there's also that other layer of, like, whenever we have a friend who hurts themselves. There's, like, that, like, initial violence of, like, what the fuck?
Which happens to me a lot.
Yeah. Or our other friend, Sarah.
Yeah.
When I found out she fell off the chair and it wasn't even her fault or anything, I was like, what happened? Like, you just get, like, angry for them.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine, like, you have that initial caring. Like, you're angry that they're even hurt.
Right.
And then you have the fact that he feels guilty that he was part of the cause.
Right.
And then you have the fact that he's already frustrated because Victoria out alpha him. So it's a bad combination, and it leads to quotes like this. Quote, he knew her leg bothered her, knew he'd been the cause, his battlefield stapling, but if she was going to be stupid and not get it looked at, then fine. And then in the next page, he'll note her thigh again. Quote, Bryce rubbed her goddamn thigh again. He swallowed down his annoyance. Like, he's just an angry boy.
He is an angry boy, and I wondered a lot about why. You know, is he trying to push off the blame because he does feel guilty? Is he trying to push off his attraction to her by being mad at her? Or is he punishing himself? Like, I couldn't really figure it out. But what I think stuck out to me the most, because I don't think I'm capable of answering those questions right now, is that we see a sign of Hunt's continued self-awareness here. Quote, he didn't feel like getting another lecture on domineering alpha hole behavior. He obviously cares about Bryce being in pain. He does not want her to be in pain. But he's checking himself because it is her body.
Yeah.
It is her choice.
Yep. It also has, like, they haven't talked yet about that night.
Yeah.
They haven't been open. And it's like this giant elephant in the room. Hunt doesn't even know that Bryce remembers as much as she does.
Yep.
Neither of them have approached the subject, so I think it's just more frustration of, like, God, like, he doesn't even get to apologize to her yet, because then he'd have to admit it. And then is he lying? Is he, does he feel guilty about not saying anything right now?
Right, but I appreciate that he's not willing to bring it up first, because he doesn't necessarily want to trigger Bryce about talking about the night your best friend died.
Right? That's,
it's messy.
It's not the hottest conversation to have.
No, it's not.
Hunt and Bryce go back out to look for the demon, and it is pouring rain again, as Amy's saying, and they are looking into the sewers, which is now gross.
Nasty.
Nasty, nasty. And Bryce is like, all right, let's do it. We're going into the sewers. Like, I'm ready. And Hunt says no. Quote, he said carefully, you haven't made the drop. Spare me your protective bullshit. Now, that's Bryce speaking, the second part there. And Hunt went from alpha hole to mother hen to protective. And she is condemning him less and less each time. It's not a matter of, you know, feminizing his protectiveness. It's not a matter of him being an alpha hole. It's a matter of him being allowed to be protective of her.
Yeah. What she's doing is she's acknowledging that he cares mm-hmm. without being like, oh, you care.
Yeah. Yeah. And another moment here, quote, she cut him a glare. He gave one right back. Hunt had a feeling he passed some test when she smiled slightly. Bryce won't concede to an alpha hole, just an equal. So this is where my note was, because I was like, just like Danica. And I'm like, no, she did concede to Danica a lot.
Yeah, she did.
And this is where her relationship with Hunt thrives, where Bryce gets to be the alpha hole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Hunt is just an equal.
Yeah. I think it also goes back to that rebirth conversation we just had. We're seeing a rebirth in their relationship with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because she sees him for what he is, being protective. And when he calls her sweetheart, she doesn't call him out for it, where she totally did earlier in this novel.
Yep, yep.
She said, don't call me sweetheart. She doesn't even acknowledge that he calls her sweetheart because their relationship is at a new level. She knows he's not being condescending. They know that they're equals. And Hunt's kind of testing that.
Yeah.
So in a way, they're both testing each other and finding mm-hmm. that they like where they're at. They're this new playing ground that they're at is like, okay, this is okay. We're yeah. okay here.
Yeah. She doesn't. I do love that she doesn't call him out on not calling her sweetheart because
mm-hmm.
like this would have been a perfect moment, but I'm somehow make it work. She could have been like, hey, don't call me sweetheart. Don't call me kid. Don't call me baby.
he did call her baby.
He did. In this moment of Amy talking about like rain and we talk about rebirth and they're allowed to be intimate with each other, Hunt says something so vulnerable that I don't think he would say this if it wasn't for that rain representation you were talking about.
Yeah.
He says, quote, I have fun with you, Quinlan. Despite how terrible this case is, despite all of it, I haven't had fun like this in a while. And then his mind, he thinks, and ever. And it's just like, I know we're not trying to compare SJM's characters. We stopped trying to do that a while ago. But it's so different from any other male character that she's written. Hunt has put himself out there first. And fun, like, that's the thing. Like, it's that friendship. It's that mm-hmm. you just, when you really like your partner and you want to spend time with them. And Bryce doesn't admit it, but I guarantee she feels the same. Because yeah. the two, they were just two broken souls who are waking each other up.
I love it. And I love that he's willing to put himself out there because we're going to see how they build on that relationship in Sky and Breath
mm-hmm.
and how much fun they have together. I have a very specific memory of Sky and Breath where they make a joke about themselves and then they high five in yeah. the middle of a conversation with a bunch of other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just shows, and this moment for me just shows how their relationship is truly built upon mutual respect,
mm-hmm.
humor, and they genuinely like being with each other.
Yeah. They're having, even in the worst crap,
yeah.
literally in the sewer yeah. or about to go in the sewer,
yeah.
he's still having fun.
Yeah.
And like I said, Bryce won't admit her feelings. Instead, she just tells him that he might get rid of that stick up his ass. And quote, he didn't answer. There was just a click. She whirled towards to find his phone out, snapping a photo of her. Hunt's grin was a slash of white in the rainy gloom. Not only is Hunt capturing this fun moment, again, like his phone was filled with dead bodies, and now he has these moments of joy that he gets to reminisce on, but the dynamic between the two of them is set. And I think the photos is the power dynamic, and it's a fun power dynamic. It's like when you see two lions playing with each other, right? It's just two equals who get to one up each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're capturing each other in these like goofy moments.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's a moment where she's covered in shit and water and everything and dirty. And she's quote unquote weak. So he's capturing it. But it's fun.
Yeah. I love that you bring that up because I felt the same. And I thought a lot about how if this scene occurred earlier in the book, there mm-hmm. wouldn't be this, like, repressing a smile yeah. and joy that they're having in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is that they've developed a rhythm that they both like. And I think it's important that Hunt captures this moment with a photo. In the past, yes, the photos are a power dynamic, and they will continue to be. But before this moment, I would say the photos were retaliatory. They were a vehicle to annoy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, right after Hunt has admitted having fun, to me, it's him documenting that fun.
Yeah.
That he's documenting his life with Bryce in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls her a drowned rat in this moment, but I actually think he's documenting the fact that I'm having fun with you and I'm attracted to you and I can't help myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love that his grin is called a slash of white mm-hmm. in the rainy gloom, because it feels like his grin is cutting through the gloom.
Yep. Yep.
And it, to me, again, just heightens the fact that he is truly enjoying himself.
Yeah.
And it's like me at Disneyland. I have to take all the pictures. He's right? just having fun with Quinlan. He just wants to take pictures.
He just wants to be a part of it. And she sparked that by taking that selfie in his phone.
Yep.
Once they get home, Bryce is desperate to clean herself because same, why wouldn't she?
Right.
Like I mentioned earlier, it's different. Like bathing is different in this book, but so is the concept of cleanliness.
Mm-hmm.
We had Farah and Aelin in SJM's other series. They're both used to being dirty.
Right.
They're both used to living in filth for extended periods. And it really is like a moment of just a reminder of how different Bryce is in her world. Because, and I hadn't like, it hadn't really dawned on me just how different it was until she was like, ew, 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 get it all off, mm-hmm. get it all off, which is such a like, I relate moment. Those two other ones, like years, lived in filth for years.
Exactly. And it just makes Bryce more relatable
mm-hmm.
for us. And I think why Crescent City as a series, whatever your hangups are about it, because people have a lot of hangups about it, it's still so enjoyable
mm-hmm.
because we could be Bryce.
Yes.
Whereas I've never felt like I could be Feyre or Aelin.
Completely. And that just that. I don't want to call it prissy because, like, anyone would want to be clean.
Yeah, like, ew.
Yeah, like, just that, like, you know, those moments when you feel like you have to, body wash twice.
Yeah.
Just to make sure you get everything. While Bryce is in the shower, SJM feels the need to remind us that Hunt has a foot fetish. Quote, Hunt knocked 20 minutes later. Don't forget to clean between your toes. Like, you know what's in his mind. He's like, so that I can suck him later.
Seriously. I never made that connection before now.
Really? Just the, like, he's like, I wanna suck on those clean little piggies.
That's so gross. No, I mean, to each their own.
I can't suck on toes.
No.
You know, I'm willing to be open about myself. And that is, I don't like feet.
Yeah. Feet. You really don't like feet.
Feet freak me out a little bit. But you can touch my feet. I don't want to touch yours.
Right. Or be touched. The times I've accidentally touched you with my feet.
I feel like I've gotten better in recent years.
You've gotten better, but
it's not good.
It's not. I mean, and it's fine.
Yeah.
I understand. But I always forget sometimes. And like, then you're
just like the jerk. I think now my body just like convulses versus me sprinting away from you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Why does Hunt interrupt Bryce other than to remind her to clean between her toes? He is there to bring some grave information, and that's what he found. And he found Jelly Jubilee.
Actually, he needs soap.
Yes.
And then he goes looking for the soap and then finds Jelly Jubilee.
Right. And Hunt, in the moment though, Hunt was trying to find Bryce's sex toys because he sees a little bit of purple sparkle, which I'm like, I guess some sex toys are sparkly, but I love that that's what his mind jumps to.
Yeah.
And he ends up finding her stash of unicorn / Pegasus. And Bryce has embraced something that that society would consider very girly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very childish, very, you know, like just like a little girl. And she embraces it. More than embraces it, she protects them, and she's not afraid or embarrassed to say, yeah, they bring me joy. I love them.
Right.
And so many times female joy is often made fun of. I mean, how about the fact that some people still don't take the Barbie movie seriously?
Mm-hmm.
It also, and Bryce also talks about it, representing her not being able to fit in and then being able to fit in.
Yeah.
So even though Hunt came out to started to tease her about it, he never made fun of her.
Mm-hmm.
And especially after the explanation that Bryce gives as to why she loves them, quote, "His eyes shone as she gently set the box on the high shelf. I'll never laugh at them again."
It's really important to me that Hunt doesn't make fun of the items. Of course, he's got questions and he's curious. And you expect him to be like, you've had these for almost 20 years. Like, mm-hmm. you don't need to hold on to these.
Mm-hmm.
But what he sees and what Bryce is capable of explaining, because they are now accustomed to being vulnerable with each other,
mm-hmm.
is that this is the representation of the first time in her life she felt accepted.
Yeah.
And Hunt can empathize with that because he's never really felt accepted, right? He's never been like all the other angels.
Yeah.
The only time he's ever felt accepted was by Shahar, but really she just utilized him for his power.
Mm-hmm.
And right now Hunt is going through his own transformation where he realizes he does value connection to others and he does want to build connection. And honestly, I bet he wishes he had his own Jelly Jubilee.
Yeah.
So that he could build those connections, because it's the only one he's been able to succeed with is Bryce.
Yep.
And he understands how special that is.
I wonder what is going on in his mind with all of these like vulnerable moments. Mm-hmm. And he's doing the whole synth thing with the Viper Queen right now,
mm-hmm.
in the background.
It hasn't happened yet.
No, I know. Well, they started talking by now.
It says, so if I recall,
uh-huh.
his explanation is it doesn't click until he's maybe. No, you're right. I can't remember. Never mind.
Well, I don't remember either. Future us will figure that out.
Yeah. It's just the whole twist with the synth always throws me off. And yeah. I've never really fully
believed it.
Grasped it.
And that's why I'm like holding on here of like, this is the guy?
Right.
This is the guy that betrays you?
From what I recall, it was a very quick in the moment thing that happened. So to me, in my brain, and I could be wrong, but it isn't actually taking place yet. Those conversations are not taking place.
Okay. We will find out once we read the...
Yeah, we'll find out. I could be completely wrong.
Or I.
We shall see. In chapter 42, the rain finally clears away. And this is the moment I'm choosing to go back to chapter 41 and talk about why Bryce tells Hunt where her vibrator is. So to me, Bryce telling Hunt where her vibrator is almost equivalent to Hunt taking a picture of Bryce in the rain. And here's why. It feels like a turning point in their attraction to one another. Hunt taking a picture of Bryce in the rain, to me, solidifies his attraction to her and the joy he gets from being with her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's signaling that to her by taking the picture. The same is true for Bryce when she tells Hunt where her vibrator is.
Yeah.
That I have fun with you and I'm willing to trust you with this information and admit to both of us right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I would not tell someone where my vibrator is if I was attracted to them.
Really?
If I wanted them to know where it was.
I'd tell them.
Even if you weren't attracted to them?
Yeah.
I mean, it's different for you and I to know where each other's vibrators are.
Because you helped me, me get the shelf of where to put them.
Would you tell Randall where your vibrator is?
I have no shame. I tell people where not to look.
Okay. A normal person.
Like, I mean, it's not come up, but like I have... Yeah. You know what? Fair. Normal person. That's true.
I'm just trying to establish that they're now playing a game of sexy chicken.
The sexy chicken has cross universes. The sexy chicken is in the room with us.
The sexy chicken is now the universe.
Wait, what? Rather MCU? It's the SCU. Chicken universe.
I didn't plan for this to happen, by the way.
I love it.
But my point is, they are attracted to each other. The rain is cleared away because they are firmly in the camp of, I am attracted to you, mm-hmm. and I'm willing to signal that to you now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rebirth, whatever.
Sexy chicken phone shop. We get the story about Bryce and Danica being a part of like a bunch of parties when they were in college. And there was a mer person that lived on their floor and everyone partied there. And then everyone essentially trashed the place and all the students got fined. Now, Bryce was able to intercept that fine from her parents finding out, and then she was able to pay it off. Danica, not so lucky. Sabine found out and then made Danica pick up trash for a summer, telling her if you want to act like trash, you can spend your time with it. So what does Bryce and Danica do? They end up dressing up as trash for
a party.
And it's the first instance that we see Bryce using people's labels as a shield and as a weapon.
Yeah. I also want to point out that when Sabine tells Danica, if you want to act like trash or whatever, know, where does she send Danica to pick up trash? In the meadows, as in Asphodel Meadows, as in where the humans live.
I did not
so she's
that.
Basically saying,
go be like Bryce.
Go be, if you're going to act like trash, go be trash, aka go be human. And I would not be surprised if Danica learned a lot about humans, not just from Bryce, because this is after their first semester together.
Yep.
If Danica learned a lot about humans by spending time in their area and seeing how poorly they were treated. So not only does she see it from Bryce's experience, but she gets to see it from other human experience.
Yep. Oh, I love that. Oh, it chills. We then meet Therion. And he's introduced, and we get a hot ginger mermaid guy, and he's a flirt.
But he is a huge flirt.
He's a huge flirt. He calls Bryce legs.
Yes, which I love.
I do. And even their dynamic going into book two, it's one of my favorite things where they're just like the shameless flirting. But when we're introduced to Therion, we're introduced to a crab.
We are.
When Therion shows up on the rock, he knocks over this crab. And then when Therion leaves, the crab is about to get back up, he knocks over the crab again. And it's a funny moment. You know, I think it's just like a cute little humorous moment. But I also think it shows his character.
Yeah.
He's not all charm and like good time. He's also very inconsiderate too. Or determined to do his own thing.
Yeah. He's selfish. Which we see a lot in Sky and Breath. Yes, this is a very comedic moment, and I could see it play out in a movie or in an animated series. However, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's so rude.
It's actually a bad quality.
Yeah.
And it's going to bite him in the ass.
It is. Now, this other little note, it's another spoiler for book two. So, again, skip ahead. But I noticed that Hunt's not super threatened by Therion. And it just reminded me of this moment in book two in Hosab when Bryce is practicing winnowing, teleportation, whatever you want to call it. And they're in a room and there's like Rune and Hunt and Therion and Cormac, like they're all there, right? And she's kind of hopping around and she's like teasing people, poking them, surprising them. And she hops over to Therion and he grabs her and kisses her on the lips. And you hear the next line is Hunt's booming laugh. You know, fill this air. Hunt doesn't care about Therion.
Yeah.
I want to know why, because Hunt was, I don't want to say he was threatened by Victoria, but he also was like not happy.
Right.
With Victoria's flirty smile with Bryce. But with Therion flat out hitting her, like hitting on her, being like, oh, what does your boyfriend think about the Umbra Mortis? He just kind of, he's a little tickled by it.
It is really odd. Because Hunt even thinks in this moment, quote, normally Hunt would have dragged Bryce away from the river's edge, but with Therion beside them, none of the river's denizens would dare approach. And I wonder if this is key to why Hunt isn't threatened by Therion, because Therion inherently is a protector, and Hunt knows that side of Therion. And so maybe he just understands Therion at a different level than he understands most other people.
Yeah.
Because of their work together on cases. I don't know. It is really strange to me because Therion should be the person that he's threatened by.
Right. If SJM ever were to write Crescent City 4 in a different perspective, I think it'll be Therion. I think she's setting him up. Again, Crescent City 3 hasn't come out, so who knows?
So who knows?
But I think she is setting him up, and if we ever got backstory, I bet we would get backstory from Hunt and we would find something out that makes him trust him so much like that.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
We shall see. I just want to make a note that during this scene, Hunt thinks about the River Queen. And we learn through Hunt's perspective that the River Queen is feared and respected by all. This includes all of the city heads, Micah himself. We also learned that the theory is the River Queen is half river spirit. Quote, born from the mighty river that encircles the world and sister to the Ocean Queen. And another quote, the River Queen could possibly wash away all of Lunathian if provoked. Even Micah maintained a healthy, respectful relationship with her. I find this all curious, and I point it out only because why is this information important? And I don't think we've learned that yet.
Yeah.
We don't really understand why this information about the River Queen is important.
Yeah.
And she comes up again in Sky and Breath, and it still hasn't come full circle yet for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So I point this out because we haven't gotten to Crescent City 3 yet. We might see more of her, of her powers. And I wonder if she'll be key to the war against the Asteri.
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
Yep. And then just take a moment for the otters, the little messengers, little otter messengers. And they're cute.
Yeah, they are. And one of our listeners, Bingo Cards on Instagram for this season said, Amy wants an otter. And yes, I do.
So you can mark that off your bingo card.
You can mark that on your bingo card. But I also want to point out that Therian makes fun of Bryce for squealing about the otters. Quote, do you think the Reapers fall to pieces over them too? Bryce responds with, quote, I bet even the Underking himself squeals when he sees them. And I like it because we see once again Bryce defending her feminine joy. Mm-hmm. And actually, honestly, it's not a gender thing. They're just cute. And,
right.
And that's why she uses the Underking as a, like, even the scary male can enjoy the otters.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah, I'm happy you pointed that out because, like, it's great when you have Hunt, who just saw Jelly Jubilee and doesn't make fun of her.
Yeah.
And here she is squealing about otters and she gets made fun of. And she defends herself. But it is a good, like, Hunt's different.
Hunt is different. It's a great parallel.
I mean, it's really, what's hard for me is I'm sitting here doing this episode next to your cat
who's sleeping
right next to me.
So cute.
And like, it's just, I want to like bite her face.
I do too. I want to munch on her ears.
She's awake. She can hear our violence.
She's preparing for the violence. Oh, no, oh no, she's just making herself cuter.
I can bite it from a different angle now. Let's talk about the power of clothing. Bryce and Hunt start discussing the jacket that Bryce wears, and it's Danica's jacket. And Bryce says that it resonates with her. And it also probably brings her comfort. Mm-hmm. You know, I have my watch from my dad that he used to wear every day. It's not a fancy watch. It was just the watch that he wears, that he used to wear all the time. And whenever I miss him, I wear it. It's like, I understand that entirely. Also, it's a cool ass jacket.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't she? And Hunt talks about his hat. Like, it's such a, like, you know, you give personal information, I give personal information.
It's called quid pro quo.
Yeah, but like healthy.
Healthy quid pro quo.
And Hunt talks about his hat. Quote, that hat was the first thing I bought when I came here, with the first paycheck I ever received from Micah. I saw it in an athletic shop, and it just seemed so ordinary. There is strength in clothing, and that's something that Bryce is very familiar with. She wears a lot of tight, revealing, sexy clothing, party girl clothing, when she wants to. And she finds strength in those moments of makeup and doing her hair and everything. Hunt is now admitting that he has done the same thing with that hat. And he's being open and vulnerable. And I love it. I love it. Things start to get hot when Bryce teases Hunt that she's got tattoos in places that he has never seen. And the only places left are some very intimate places. Now, I'm going to read a quote. If you are my mom, please skip. I don't want her to hear me say it. These words.
Do you want me to read it?
No.
Okay.
No. She can deal. Quote, with any other male, she would have said, why don't you come find out? With any other male, she would have been on the other side of the desk, crawling into his lap, unbuckling his belt, and then sliding down onto his cock, riding him until they were both moaning and breathless, and she made herself go back to the paperwork. There are a few males who can answer that question if you're so curious. Bryce knows that she's attracted to Hunt, and she's like, I want to sleep with this man.
Yeah.
I want to go over. If it was literally any other person in this whole wide world, I would be on that dick. And she can't because things would get complicated. But for me, it's the redirect that she gives him. Why don't you go ask the few males?
Mm-hmm.
Like, rather than just playing it off, she kind of has to challenge him.
Yeah.
And I think that just makes him hornier.
Yeah.
Because, you know, once she looks at him, he's like, you know, rawr.
Yes, and I'm going to go into that. They are both pushing boundaries here, right? She's challenging him mm-hmm. by, like, why don't you go ask the other males? Which to me is signaling I've been with other males, but also something that it's also signaling you can find out if you want to find out.
Yeah, yeah.
How that happens is up to you, sir. But you could go find out. It's also telling on Hunt's part and him testing his own boundaries. Quote, his face was flushed and his eyes fucking soulless. His black eyes glittered, wholly fixed on her face like he was thinking of touching her, tasting her. The only thing holding them back is the Shahar detail in his background. Really, yeah. Truly.
Yeah.
Because Bryce was all gung-ho until she heard about Hunt still being hung up on Shahar. And that came from his lips.
Till the day I die.
Right, right. And his loyalty to Shahar is what holds him back.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop him from testing her boundaries either by asking, do you have a tattoo in intimate these places? They're pushing back and forth, and it's solidifying that they both acknowledge their mutual attraction.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know what the fuck to do about it.
It's also great because it's forcing emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
Like, because they can't jump into bed, they have to, like, develop this friendship, this playfulness, this joking around.
Right.
This foot fetish. You know, there's so many things they have to focus on.
Right. Basically, what it is they're developing intimacy without physical intimacy.
Yeah.
Which
is
not a bad thing.
Yep. It's emotional intimacy edging.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't make sense, but it was just
no, fun it makes to say. Sense to me.
Okay, cool. In chapter 43, Bryce and Hunt decide to go to Sabine's place. the PAX area.
Yeah. The den.
Hunt prepares by wearing his quote usual battle suit. And Bryce does too by wearing heels. Heels that she then pretty quickly wishes that were actually sneakers and that she hadn't worn what she'd worn. And I think this shows that this isn't the right armor to face this group of people. Bryce is wearing what she usually does, and she looks like the party girl that people normally accuse her of. And I think that that would work any other place, but it's not going to work here. Why she's so shaken up, though, is because Sabine and Ethan, really, Bryce's main method of defense won't work with them.
Yeah, and I think it's because they weaponize her weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They weaponize her party girl persona against her. And with anybody else, it wouldn't bother Bryce. But because of the history and that mutual connection of Danica, it does harm her.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to talk more about why in this chapter, but it is really sad to see.
It's sad to see because it's not like Bryce would have saved them. You know, like, mm-hmm. It's not like Bryce being at the apartment would have saved everyone there. There's nothing she could have done.
Right.
However, she was, in fact, hooking up with someone else mm-hmm. while partying and on drugs. You know, like, because it's such a half-truth.
Yeah.
Where, like, she was doing all these other party girl things.
Right.
But it's not like she did anything wrong by doing that. But right. It also feels wrong.
Right. But I also think that even if she had shown up in athletic wear, they still would have weaponized the party girl.
Completely. Completely.
And that's almost why I think Bryce didn't bother.
I think she forgot.
Probably.
I think it would have at least made her feel
more secure.
More secure. Bryce still tries to get her persona, though, to work. And it does work on Amelie. When Amelie accuses Bryce and Danica of having hooked up with two,
Demonaki.
Thank you. Accusing Bryce and Danica of hooking up with two Demonaki. Bryce says, quote, it was three Demonaki, actually. And in this moment, Bryce can use what she is used to. Because with Amelie, it can work because Amelie isn't in that inner circle. Like, right. She doesn't know the way that Ethan and Sabine know. So at least she kind of she's able to get that little dig there.
Yeah. So good for Bryce.
Yeah.
What I really, 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 really don't like about this entire chapter is just how cruel the wolves are.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of them kind of like the hyenas in Lion King.
Ooh, good one.
They're just cruel for the sake of being cruel. Now, it's explained to us in this chapter that it's because the House of Earth and Blood and the House of Sky and Breath are rivals. So, a.k.a. wolves and angels are rivals, just like Fae and angels are rivals.
Yep.
But what I really don't like is Amelie using Hunt's slave status against him.
Mm-mm.
And the fact that he's fallen gets hung over his head, even though she is a lesser Vanir than he is. What happens in the process, though, is that Hunt shows his true colors and in the best way possible. And it shocks Bryce, I think, because Hunt acts like a gentleman.
Yeah.
Quote, "There are six pups playing in sight of this gate. I'm not going to beat the shit out of you in front of children." And you know what? It's morals and it's hot.
I find it sexy when men don't want to do violence in front of kids.
Yeah, let's not cause trauma to the youths.
Right? Whew, sign me up.
What I think is attractive to Bryce in this moment is that she does equate Hunt to Danica. They both want to protect the young.
Mm-hmm.
It's a positive connection. And even though I would never say Hunt and Danica are the same, it does, for Bryce, increase the attractiveness.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
She makes that connection.
Absolutely. Bryce is treated like shit and Hunt hates it. You know, I think they both know that they have to let it happen in order to get in.
Yeah.
And Hunt tries to be threatening when he can, but he's really struggling to hold back, which, again, is also hot to see.
Yeah.
And throughout these scenes, just like we saw previously, he's giving her these small touches. He's able to let his wing brush past her. And eventually, Bryce will even admit, quote, "At least alpha holes were good for something," once he kind of like bares his teeth at Ethan or one of them and just is like, you know, like, "Hey, big strong man here. Can kick your ass." To your point, Amy, I do struggle with this scene because of how much the wolves treat her like shit. But I think what me trying to find a happy, optimistic moment is that they keep throwing Bryce's lowest point in her life in her face. Again, she didn't do anything wrong, but she was partying and she was sleeping with someone else during the times of the murder. This was her lowest point. And Hunt sees it all. And he's never there to judge. Yeah. Or to criticize, and he's there to comfort for that shame. And he was there on that night, and he's there for this moment. And so it's like, I do like the, think about the worst thing you've ever done, and your partner hears it, or, you know, or your crush or whoever, and they don't bat an eye.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It says a lot about Hunt's character. I want to continue to go into the reasons why I hate this chapter. And hate in a good way, right? As Sham did a really, really great job bringing up my emotions as a reader.
Yeah, we passionately love hate this.
Yes, exactly. The wolves not only have to continue to rag on Bryce in a way that makes her relive her worst moment, they also have to bring Danica down. And now Danica was supposed to be the next prime over Sabine. She's the strongest alpha. People worshipped the ground that she walked on. And yet these wolves have no respect for her.
Yeah.
Amelie says, to taunt Bryce, quote, "You know, sometimes I think I should thank you. They say if Danica hadn't been so distracted by messaging you about your drunk bullshit, she might have anticipated the attack and then I wouldn't be where I am."
Right.
Bryce responds, quote, "Danica was 1,000 times the wolf you are. No matter where you are, you'll never be where she was." And to me, it's actually shocking to see how much Danica was disliked or maybe just envied because of her powers. And I never really thought about it this way, but I wonder if we're supposed to call into question our own like for Danica in this moment.
Ooh.
That the people who were supposed to respect her despised her and even rag on her in death.
I love that. I mean, Ethan only talks about Connor.
Right.
He doesn't really mention Danica. And I think Danica's death, the wolves would see it as shameful.
Yeah.
That, and that's why they have to blame Bryce.
Yeah.
Which makes them angry that Bryce would be that distraction, that distracting, because like here she was the most powerful of wolves in a really long time, and she wasn't even able to protect herself.
And she begged while she died.
Exactly. So, you know, whether I think they did respect her, but I think that now Danica is just like a shameful thing to them.
Yeah, a shameful part of their past, yeah. Basically. Yeah, which is sad. And I'm sure it's really hard on Bryce, too. And I'm sure that's why she's having the reaction that she's having.
Yeah.
It's not just about her memories being dragged up. It's about
everyone.
Her best friend
yep.
being treated like shit.
Yep.
I also want to point out that it's been a while since Bryce has really been triggered about something from her past. And what we're seeing in this moment is we're seeing Bryce of early part two before she met Hunt. Like things are triggering for her the mm-hmm. way it was when Micah first came and wanted her to work on this case.
Yep.
Like the first time she saw a dead body after starting to work on the case. Ethan especially is a huge trigger because he's another lost friend, but he didn't have to be a lost friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really hard on Bryce. And Bryce blames herself in a way for Ethan dropping out of college and quitting Sunball. And she chooses to punish herself by keeping the pictures of them together, the texts, the voicemails, all on her phone.
Yeah.
And everything about her interaction with Ethan is seen through the lens of punishment. Quote, Ethan's pace was leisurely, as if he could scent Bryce's misery and wanted to make her endure it every possible second. She supposed she deserved it, knew she deserved it. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this at the end of the chapter, but this point, for this to take place now, I think not only challenges Bryce's resolve to heal and to move forward, it's also a marker for how far she's come. Even mm-hmm. though she's getting really beat up right now, she's really made progress on her healing journey.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see that when this is what's happening.
Yeah. I love the introduction of Ethan because we find out here that Bryce didn't respond to his phone calls. And there's a lot that I think Bryce, you know, beats herself up on that, you know, she couldn't stop the death. She, you know, she shouldn't put that on herself. She drank too much. She did a bunch of drugs. Yes, that's true. But again, it's not like that would have changed too much. Now, the one thing that I will say does not reflect well on her mm-hmm. is not calling back Ethan.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have been as harsh with her.
Yeah.
About her having hooked up with someone else. I think that her, you know, she would have still had a friend. And it was so uncool of her. I mean, again, she's going through her own traumatic stuff. Like, right. I'm not here to be like, you should have your shit together, young lady. But if there's one thing, and that's why I think seeing Ethan is the hardest one for her.
Yeah.
Because that is the one thing she truly has reason to feel guilty.
Right. She knows she failed him.
Yeah.
And Ethan is being a dick. But honestly, I don't blame him because he was abandoned in his time of need.
Absolutely. He was worried about her.
Right.
He, you know, like she recites some of the things that he sent her and the fact that like he was truly so concerned
mm-hmm.
and she couldn't even give him a I'm okay text.
Yeah.
Let's talk about ownership. Quote, loyalty was the most prized of all wolf traits. In their eyes, she and Connor had been inevitable, nearly mated. Just a question of time. Her hookups before that hadn't mattered, and neither had his, because nothing had been declared yet. Until he'd asked her out at last, and she had said yes, had started down that road. To the wolves, she was Connor's, and he was hers. Bryce is so wrapped up in her own grief right now that she doesn't see that this is the very reason why she was avoiding Connor. She didn't want the alpha hole, and what comes with the alpha hole is being claimed, is being mm-hmm. owned. And not only would she have been owned by Connor, but she would have been owned by the entire pack. And just by agreeing to a date,
yeah,
they're all going to shame her for it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not acceptable, that type of behavior. And she doesn't see how wrong that is.
Right. But what they refuse to acknowledge is the fact that Bryce has continued to be loyal despite everything.
Yeah.
And just by the act of Bryce continuing to punish herself, she's proving her own loyalty mm-hmm. to Danica, to Connor, to the pack. And it's just a really sad, messed up situation. And it makes me think that this is almost representative of generational trauma.
Yep. Yep.
In this world.
Mm-hmm.
I have no other thoughts, but that's what I thought.
I am going to, because this episode's kind of a little bit all over the place.
Yeah.
Episode or book two, spoiler. Okay. I should have been putting this in the breadcrumbs, but alas, here we are. We're close enough to breadcrumbs. So when I was reading this whole, like, what are the traits? Let me go back to the traits, right? That for wolves, loyalty was the most prized. In their eyes, Connor and her were inevitable. Nearly made it. Just a question of time. This is, again, CC3 hasn't come out. But we feel like there's a clear link between the wolves and with Tamlin.
Mm-hmm.
That type of behavior made me think of Tamlin with
mm-hmm.
Feyre.
Mm-hmm.
That entitlement that we are basically mates.
Yeah.
Because you've chosen me. And you said yes. And therefore, that means I get to own you entirely.
And you don't get to change your mind.
Exactly. And I think that, like, if they are somehow linked together, I can see similar behaviors.
Yeah.
Ethan's treatment, like we keep saying, it's really hard to see how Ethan treats Bryce. It's just what the hardest part for me is that it's based in slut shaming.
Mm-hmm.
And he has valid reason to be mad at her. But rather than, he would have to make himself vulnerable and say, you never called me back.
Right. And that hurt him.
Exactly. Like, that's too much to ask. Fair, you know, but I don't like the slut shaming. But that's where it really comes from, right? And again, spoiler for book two, we know that he likes her.
Right.
And that also has a big part of it, too. So Bryce calls him out, also saying that Connor would be ashamed of him for following Amelie.
Exactly. As much as I don't like Ethan's treatment of Bryce, it's an excellent parallel to Hunt, because Ethan says all his slut-shaming things in front of the children in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Hunt was like, I'm not going to beat you up.
Yeah.
But Ethan doesn't give a shit.
If the kids are there.
If the kids are there and slut-shames her in front of all the kids.
And now look at the next generation of sexism right there.
Right, right, right. Exactly. It's not as maybe traumatic,
mm-hmm.
but it's just not acceptable.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's just as traumatic.
Okay. It's just as traumatic.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up this episode, I want to talk about the importance of Bryce's visit to Sabine and to the den in terms of her own personal journey. Up until this point, Bryce has done everything she can to avoid Sabine. However, she knows how important it is to finding out the truth, and I think she's developed enough inner strength and support with Hunt that she's willing to instigate this encounter despite having avoided Sabine for ages. While Bryce is not at the point yet to really stop punishing herself to delete the mean voicemails and the old text messages and the pictures that cause her harm, which we'll see later in the novel, is in fact a symbol of her truly moving on.
Mm-hmm.
What we are seeing here in this chapter is that Bryce is willing to face the people who, like Bryce, were left behind with Danica's death, and that bring up hard memories. And that's the honestly bravest thing Bryce has done
mm-hmm.
in this entire novel. Is to be like, I know that this is going to cause me harm.
Yeah.
But this is really important
yep.
for us to move forward in this case, to find the murderer. And honestly, for Hunt's sake as well.
Yeah.
It's important for Hunt, too. Despite the harm that is caused to Bryce in this chapter, we see an important development in her relationship with Hunt as well.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, Hunt's eyes scanned her face. Worry, not triumph at Sabine's blatant lie shining there. Bryce is able to recognize that Hunt is prioritizing her over the case. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important and honestly makes his betrayal even worse later on.
Yeah.
So even though Bryce's healing hasn't fully taken place yet, she's on that path. And we're seeing how Bryce is willing to say, you know what? I don't like this, but I'm going to knuckle down and try to move forward. And that's really a really far cry from who she was 300 pages ago.
Yep.
And it's a really great marker for the halfway point of this novel
mm-hmm.
that we see her do this hard thing. And I just wanted to acknowledge that.
I love it. I love it. We've been so much nicer to Bryce and Hunt than we have been to
Feyre and Rhys.
Yes. And I was wondering that as you're talking. And I think that's what reminded me is as you're speaking, where I was like, you know, Hunt and Bryce already started so low.
Yeah.
And their faults started at the top.
Yeah.
That it's been a matter of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once we get to Hosab, CC2, we'll see more, we'll have more things to say about them critically.
I agree. I think that they don't pretend to be heroes.
Yeah.
Or perfect at all.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to not criticize them.
Yeah, because they're doing it for us.
Like, yeah, they punish themselves constantly because they hate themselves.
And they're working on growth. Right. That's the other thing is like every single thing they're doing is towards growth and healing and betterment.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like we're really letting them off easy.
Oh yeah, wait till Sky and Breath.
I'm sure.
Now we're going to go into breadcrumbs that are non-multiverse related. They are strictly Crescent City related. In chapter 39, there are several clues that the Metawitch rune meets is actually Hypaxia. So let me just read a few quotes for you. Quote, she gestured again at the hallway, graceful as a queen. A couple pages later, quote, this clinic is full of marvels that I did not know existed, that my tutors did not know existed. This is a clue because we have previously learned the former queen kept her daughter sequestered. And finally, when talking about the dead queen Hecuba, quote, Rune could have sworn sorrow clouded her eyes. For a moment, her shoulders seemed to curve inward, her head bowing under a phantom weight.
Mm-hmm. Dumb Rune.
So dumb.
Now, this is spoiler for book two. I do want to point out when Hypaxia, when he asked about her accent, she was like, oh, they're my tutors from a different place. I'm like, yep. They dead.
Yeah.
They exactly. Dead tutors.
Oh, yeah. He talks. I didn't include it and I should have. Is like, oh, yeah, they're from this old part of this area. He's like, everything there is old.
Right. So, no, they did. So some more breadcrumbs here is that Rune smells Hypaxia's scent and tells himself not to be a creep because he's like super into it and he really likes her voice. Well, why is that? It's because that's his mate's sister.
Do we know that they're mates?
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Because that's who we're suspecting is his mate's sister. At the very least, it's Lydia's sister. And he's really into Lydia. People are suspecting their mates. We haven't read CC3, so we don't know.
We don't know.
But that's what he... So when he meets Lydia, or Day at the time, he's like, God, she smells so familiar. Mm-hmm. I really like the way she sounds. Her sound's so nice.
In chapter 40, after Isaiah witnesses Bryce and Hunt trade barbs via text, Isaiah tells Hunt, quote, there are worse fates than death, you know. Hunt looked toward the Comitium, the female archangel lurking in it. I know. And even though I think the comment was about Hunt and Bryce's relationship, I also think this is a sly foreshadowing on SJM's part that Hunt is going to end up with a fate worse than death very soon, a.k.a. he's going to be sold to Zandriel.
Mm-hmm. In chapter 42, when Hunt asks Bryce about Danica's jacket, quote, Danica used to store her stuff in the supply closet here, rather than bothering to go back to the apartment or over to the den. She'd stash the jacket here the day. I don't want Sabine to have it. Just like Danica stashed the sword and Bryce didn't give it back to Sabine. I'll start multiverse.
Sure.
Now to move into multiverse, just thoughts and breadcrumbs. The first one isn't a breadcrumb. It's a thought. Chapter 41. Bryce, when we see Bryce with the Pegasus, I just really need her to see the Pegasus in Crescent City 3.
And to your, and this is a multiverse thing because Helion has Pegasus, which we learn in Silver Flames.
Yep.
Therian teases Bryce about taking her under the water with him, and Hunt thinks, quote, some of the darker Myr had done just that long ago, carried human brides down to their undersea courts and kept them there, trapped within the massive air bubbles, unable to reach the surface, just like the Kelpie tried to take Nesta in Silver Flames.
Mm-hmm. On Bryce's tattoo, quote, the tattoo on my back says the same thing, that thing being through love all is possible. Well, in some fancy alphabet that she, Danica, dug up online. But Danica had a thing about the phrase. It was all the Oracle told her, apparently. So the language thing, that's the Book of Breathings language.
Which we learned from chapter one.
Yep.
Earlier this week.
That's all we've got.
That's all we know.
And I forgot that the Oracle is the one who told her, through love, all is possible.
Which is creepy, and it makes me wonder what side the Oracle's on.
Yeah, you know, I was after the chapter was released, I was like, oh my god. So I've been like listening to graphic audio version of ACOTAR, and I was listening to the part where Feyre was looking at the tapestry and she sees the world, the hands create the cauldron. Did you read that part? There's language that she doesn't recognize.
It's probably the same.
Ancient Fae.
Yep.
Which makes me go back to Tamlin has additional information on the OG Ancient Fae.
Explain that this is your theory.
This is my theory, ladies and 3% gentlemen.
Which we all may laugh at if we've read Crescent City 3 by the time this comes out.
But you know what? Weeks. I need to have my say now in case I'm right.
Yep.
And then I could be like, I knew it. So in the first chapter and prologue, in the first chapter that SJM released of CC3, we see Bryce says that the Asteri tax people for their power, and Amarin is the one that says a tithe, and immediately I thought Tamlin. And my theory is that Tamlin, the Spring Court, has maybe might have some information on the Asteri or lore or books that they're going to have to go to the Spring Court to get. And then there's, you know, things that people have talked about, that the tattoos that the Pack of Devils have on their neck is Tamlin in the beast form, a wolf with antlers on it. And again, does Tamlin have a connection to the Asteri and to their old rulers? Does the Starlight Pond have anything to do with it? We'll find out very soon.
We'll find out. But to add to that, when listeners ask me about this, about like, oh, do you think the, you know, the tithe Asteri means Tamlin has a connection? My theory is the Daglin probably performed a tithe when they were in Prithian.
Yeah.
And that the Spring Court somehow chose to
mimic that. Yeah.
In their leadership. Who knows why?
I know.
Anyway, moving on. Our Bryce-ism for the week. The quickest way to get to the end of the hard shit is through.
Amen. Don't work around it. Just go through it. And going through it doesn't mean being an asshole.
Yeah.
Just go through it.
Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah. But, you know, you'll be through it.
It's life.
Amy.
Yes.
I got a question. Where are Bryce and Hunt in their healing journeys?
I think just we talked a lot about their mutual attraction this episode. And I think that in and of itself is a huge marker for how far they've come. Because they've been attracted to each other from the beginning, but it was never something they outright acknowledged.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that we've seen this rebirth in them and their relationship and the, you know, they're able to tease and nag and do the same things they were doing earlier in the book without repercussions shows a lot of growth in them and their relationship with one another.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, in a lot of ways, they could not heal without each other. Their healing is kind of codependent, but not in a bad way.
Yeah.
I think that...
Their healing mimics one another.
Their healing mimics one another, and they are the drivers. They drive each other's healing, if that makes sense.
Neither does the work for the other.
Correct.
But...
They are motivators they inspire, for each
other. Yes, exactly. And that is such an important thing where it's not like, oh, wow, Bryce fixed Hunt or Hunt fixed Bryce. Mm-hmm. They're doing the work on their own.
Right. And I think what I love about it is, and I think this is true of real life relationships, when you've got the right person in your life, their existence is motivation enough for you to work on yourself.
Yep.
Everyone wants to work on themselves without that person, but it's not a bad thing to have the person there to be like, you know what, you are, whatever it is in our relationship or you or whatever is worth me trying harder.
And I'm going to say that for like every relationship, friends, romantic, you know, even with like ex-partners that I've had, you know, I've been inspired to push myself, you know, and they weren't the one, but like friends have also inspired it and I haven't wanted to marry them and sorry Amy, but no, like it's a but it's definitely there's that thing when you're surrounded by the right people, and that's the thing by the right people, you are inspired no matter what.
Right. And I don't think Danica was that person for Bryce.
I agree,
but Hunt is that person for Bryce.
Bryce was that person for Danica.
Yes
And and Hunt is that, is blah, blah, blah.
Is that person for Bryce?
That one. I do think that their sexual attraction, it's just so important and so indicative of their growth, because you have Hunt who has this issues with loyalty and feeling like he can't move on and he's going to have to cope through his own process of like, did I fail? Was this all worth it? And then you have Bryce who's going through the same thing with Connor of... Did I promise myself to him? Is, you know, was I, should I not have gone and hooked up with someone else? Like, there's these other things that they're both working through. And to be sexually attracted, again, more than sexual, emotionally attracted to each other as well, that is their healing, their growth of like letting go these other parts that they were holding on to.
I would take it one step further and say it's not even about Connor for Bryce. It's actually about Danica.
Because that's fair.
Before Danica's death, she said, I don't need to be with someone. Danica's enough.
Yep. You're right.
And so Shahar for Hunt is Danica for Bryce.
It's loyalty.
It's a loyalty that they're, and the fact that they're able to be attracted to each other despite that loyalty is a huge marker of progress.
They're both learning how to let go of loyalty to a toxic individual.
Yeah.
To the memory of a toxic individual before they ever were able to get time to discover that. And they're able to discover a different type of loyalty. Yeah. And the new type of loyalty is based off of true equal partnership, true friendship, and funny photos.
And mutual respect.
Yeah.
And funny photos.
Yep. And ice cream.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Next week, we will be exploring chapters 44 through 51 of A House of Earth and Blood.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you are enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo. You can also follow us on TikTok or Instagram at the handle BookTalkForBookTalk. Bye!